Kunja Bihare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihare. Gopi Channa Pahalava Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihare Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvraja Katara Soter Satish Shri Srimad's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga Om Vishvaraya Krishna Sagutave Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Kanamani Namaste Sarasvati Gaura Vani Paterni Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskacha Desha Tarni Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Text 33 Kachitshtivam Devaka Bhuja Putra Vishnu Prajaya Iva Deva Matu Yavai Sagarvena Dadhara Devam Trayata Jagya Vitana Martam Kachchid Shivam Deva Kabhoja Putra Vishnu Pujaya Iva Deva Matu Yavai Svagarbena Dadhara Devam Trayata Yagya Vitana Martam Kachchid Shivam Devaka Bhoja Putra Vishnu Prajaya Iva Deva Matu Yavai Svagarbena Dadhara Devam Trayata Jagya Vitana Martam Others? Chant?
Jaya
Vaishnavis? Kachit, weather. Shivam, everything well. Deva Kaboja Putra, of the daughter of King Deva Kaboja. Vishnu Prajaya, of she who gave birth to the personality of Godhead. Eva, like that of Deva Matu, of the mother of the demigods, Aditi. Ya, one who, Vai, indeed, Svagarbhena, by her own womb, Dhatara, conceived, Devam, the Supreme Lord, Trayi, the Vedas, Yata, as much as, Jagyavitanam, of spreading the sacrifice, Artam, purpose. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. As the Vedas are the reservoir of sacrificial purposes, so the daughter of King Deva Kaboja conceived the Supreme Personality of Godhead in her womb, as did the mother of the demigods. Is she, Devaki, doing well? Purport. The Vedas are full of transcendental knowledge and spiritual values, and thus Devaki, the mother of Lord Krishna, conceived the Lord in her womb as the personified meaning of the Vedas. There is no difference between the Vedas and the Lord. The Vedas aim at the understanding of the Lord, and the Lord is the Vedas personified. Devaki is compared to the meaningful Vedas and the Lord to their purpose personified. Om Jnana Tamarandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Nitanina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakopa Thirubhischa Kripa Sindhu Vyabhacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namaha. Hare Krishna. So, Vidura is continuing to ask questions about to Uddhava about the different personalities in the Yadu dynasty. And of course, they have all passed away, so this is a difficult conversation, but kind of one by one he's been going through them, and generally each verse in the last few days we've been discussing one of these personalities, so I'd be remiss if I didn't discuss Mother Devaki somewhat. And then after that, talk about this idea of Krishna as the Vedas personified. Okay. So this verse also references a similarity to Aditi. It says the mother of the demigods. And of course, that was a former birth of Devaki, so naturally it's kind of been mentioned in that respect. Going back a little bit to the history, which most of you are pretty familiar with, starting with Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.32, after the prayers of Vasudev and Devaki, which were very nice, very extensive prayers, now Krishna explains their birth, his birth, and their past lifetimes. It says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, my dear mother, best of the chaste. In your previous birth, in the Swayambhuva millennium, you were known as Krishna, and Vasudeva, who was the most pious Prajapati, was named Sutapa. So it's described then, in the next few verses, how they wanted a son like Krishna. And therefore, Lord Brahma had asked them, as Sutapa was a Prajapati, had asked them to produce progeny. But they wanted his very special son, of the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they performed sacrifices for 12,000 celestial years. That's a lot. So they had three births. They had three children in three different lifetimes. Their first birth, they were Prishni and Sutapa, and Prishni Garbha became their son. Then in their second births, they became Aditi and Kashyapa, and Vamanadeva became their son. And in their third birth here, as Devaki and Vasudeva, obviously Krishna became their son. So they had all of their desires fulfilled by Krishna, that he not only once, but three times, as the Personality of Godhead, became their son. So that was very wonderful. But a lot of the other facts around Devaki's life were not so wonderful. In fact, she had to undergo great hardship due to the atrocities of Kamsa. Of course, we all know the story. On her wedding day, she's being driven by her brother in the chariot. She's marrying Vasudeva, but a voice comes from the sky, you know, one of those unembodied voices from the demigods or whatever. And of course, it said that, "You fool, the eighth son of Devaki will kill you, will be the cause of your death." So of course, Kamsa, naturally, what one would do in that circumstance? You'd immediately try to kill Devaki, your own sister, being a great demon that he was, acting pretty much in character. So Vasudeva, somehow or another, was able to dissuade him from that heinous act, and because eventually Vasudeva had promised him he would turn over every son to him. And Vasudeva was famous for his word. Even Kamsa knew he could trust him completely. So that's what happened. He locked him in a prison, and year after year, she gave birth to another son, and so the first six sons were all killed, all murdered by Kamsa. Now, it's interesting how that happened, just a little side note here, a little explanation here. This is in the purport by Sanatana Goswami on this verse. He says, "The six children who were killed were previously Devata sons of Marichi, but by offending Brahma, they became demons. They were born to Kalanami, son of Hiranyakashipu, very good lineage, as his six sons, known as the Shadgarbha. Rejecting Hiranyakashipu, they began worshiping Brahma. Angry at that, Hiranyakashipu cursed them to be killed by their father. Remembering this incident, the Lord had Yogamaya put them in the womb of Devaki to be killed by Kamsa, who had previously been their father, Kalanami." So this explained in Harivamsa. So, this is the story. And of course, we know later, many chapters later in the 10th canto, Krishna, on the request of Devaki had heard that he had brought back the son of his Sandipani Muni, his guru, because they had to ask him that as a guru dakshin. And he went to, Yamaraj to get the son back, I think. Yeah. Anyway, so she asked a similar thing. He said, "Of course." So he goes and he retrieves the eight sons of Devaki. They appeared to her as babies, so she was able to feed them, to nurse them at least one time. Then I think they resumed their natural status as the brutes, who were some kind of minor demigods. Anyway, they belonged in heavenly planets, and they returned. So again, he did at least satisfy her a little bit, so she didn't have to completely suffer the loss of all of these children. Of course, the seventh son was Balaram, Sankarshan. And Krishna made the arrangement that Yogamaya transferred him from Devaki to the womb of Rohini, who was in Gokula, of course, at that time. And then it appeared as though Devaki had a miscarriage. And everyone assumed, because she was so fearful in that state that Kamsa had put her in, that naturally she had miscarried. Then, of course, the eighth son comes, and that's Krishna. It's described very beautifully how Krishna entered the mind of Vasudeva first, and he became effulgent. And then he was transferred to the mind of Devaki, and she became glorious. And the demigods came and offered prayers. And 2.6 says, "No one could look at Devaki because of her effulgence. Seeing her shining form, they became disturbed in mind," the demigods. "Because of the bliss of the Lord, she had a pure suchi smile." So she's radiant, having, now of course, it is explained that although Krishna entered her mind, then Krishna went to her womb, so she was in a womb like a normal child. And then, finally, Krishna is born. And this is, I'll just read this because it's not exactly your natural child being born. Bhagavatam 10:3-10. Vasudeva then saw the newborn child, who had a very wonderful lotus-like eyes, and bore in his four hands the four weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. On his chest was the mark of Sri Vatsa, and on his neck the brilliant Kastuba gem. He was dressed in yellow, his body blackish like a dense cloud, his scattered hair fully grown, and his helmet and earrings sparkling uncommonly with a valuable vaidurya. Vasudeva saw the child shining brightly with brilliant belt, armlets, bangles, and other ornaments. So it is explained at first, of course, Krishna came out as a normal baby, but then he wasn't born like that. That would have been painful. At any rate, sorry. At any rate, then he immediately assumed this forearm, beautiful forearm. Then both Vasudeva and Devaki offered many prayers to Krishna as the Supreme. Now, after Devaki offers four or five prayers completely glorifying Krishna as the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, then she begins to worry for the safety of Krishna, and she asks him to withdraw his form, fearing that Kamsa will try to kill him. So she says, please, don't show us this form anymore, because she's thinking, oh my gosh, Kamsa is going to know this is Vishnu, and he'll try to kill him. Immediately forgetting that she just was glorifying him as the absolute true Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, creator of all material and spiritual worlds, etc. So, Prabhupada explains the prema of Devaki. This is from his purport of Srimad Bhagavatam 10:3-31. It says, pure devotees whose eyes are anointed with the ointment of prema love want to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Shyamasundar, Muralidhar, with the flute swaying in his two hands. In other words, in his Vrindavan form, two-handed form. He says, although Devaki's not on the Vrindavan platform, she's near the Vrindavan platform. On the Vrindavan platform, the mother of Krishna is Mother Yashoda, and on the Mathura and Dwarka platform, the mother of Krishna is Devaki. In Mathura and Dwarka, the love of the Lord is mixed with appreciation of his opulence, but in Vrindavan, the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not exhibited. And of course, that's the difference between Vrindavan and Mathura and Dwarka. With all the devotees. There's in Vrindavan, there's no understanding that Krishna is actually God and his opulence and all of his glories because the residents are covered by yoga maya, which makes them simply love Krishna, just purely the beautiful, wonderful, sweet Krishna. Prabhupada says, there are five stages of loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. Devaki is on the platform of Vatsalya. She wanted to deal with her eternal son Krishna in that stage of love, and therefore she wanted the Supreme Personality of Godhead to withdraw his opulent form of Vishnu. So that's another reason why she asked him to withdraw, not just fear of Kamsa, but she wanted, again, to see him, worship him as her son, not as Vishnu, four arms, completely outfitted like that. And Prabhupada says, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur illuminates this fact very clearly in his explanation of the verse. So thus, we go to, as Prabhupada seems to instruct here, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport. And he says, Vishnu says, there are three different levels of happiness of prema due to the coverings of jnana and aishvarya. Basically, he's saying that if one is very much just in the jnana, it's more like a shantaras or impersonal understanding of God. Then there's the mixture of aishvarya, you know, with just more pure prema. And then there's just, you know, pure prema, such as in Vrindavan. So he says, Devaki's Vatsalya prema was sometimes lessened by knowledge of Krishna's power and opulence, where Yashoda was almost always in Yogamaya pure prema. We might remember a couple of incidents where Yogamaya was withdrawn, and Yashoda saw the opulence of the Lord. Remember those times? When did that happen? Looked in his mind. Yeah, it actually happened twice. Two times right in a row in two chapters where Yashoda looks into the mouth of Krishna and sees the whole cosmic manifestation, the Virata Rupa and everything else. She becomes very bewildered and she actually doesn't like it very much. So finally Krishna with his mercy covers her back over so she can just again resume that relationship as her son. Anyway, but now here's the interesting thing. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says both are eternal nitya siddhas and their differences in prema is also nitya siddha. He says, thus, quote, there can be no further discussion of difference. So that's the end of my discussion. Now, of course, we know there are many examples of great devotees. And some of these devotees are in that mood of Vrindavan, of just sort of more into the Madhurya aspect or the sweetness aspect. And some are more either somewhat mixed with the Aishvarya or the mood of opulence. And we can think of so many great devotees like this. Narada Muni is the Shaktivesh avatar for the empowerment of bhakti. He's empowered to teach bhakti throughout the world. But yet, and he understands Vrindavan. He's very much respected and revered by the residents of Vrindavan. He's the spiritual master Purnamasi, who's Yogamaya. But his relationship with Krishna is one of dasya, with full knowledge. Or with someone like Uddhava, it's very interesting. I think Uddhava's a fascinating character. He's such a great devotee. The whole 11th canto is totally, you know, his conversations with Krishna. Krishna's most trusted advisor and friend. The only one he felt was that he could send to Vrindavan to, after he left and went to Mathura, to speak to the residents of Vrindavan and try to console them somehow with a deep grief of separation that they were feeling. So he spent several months with the residents, with the gopis, with Nanda and Yashoda, totally just, not only was he helping them, but they were giving him so much bhakti. In fact, it's described that one of the reasons Krishna sent Uddhava was not just for their benefit, but for his benefit, so that he could see this highest level of bhakti, especially as manifested by the gopis. So after all these months, Uddhava says, the gopis are so exalted that he would like to take birth as a plant, as a shrub, or a creeper in Vrindavan, just so that he could receive the dust of their lotus feet. But yet his relationship with Krishna is one of Sakya, or Sakya-dasa, actually. It's mixed, because he's his friend, he's his counselor, he's his advisor. But at the same time, he knows this is God. This Krishna, is he knows his powers. So we have different types of rasas. And as far as I, unless somebody has some other understanding of this, my understanding is that particular relationship with Krishna is more or less due to one's eternal siddhideya, one's eternal sarup. You know, it's like what we are, you know, in our, once the, you know, that this, the spiritual body is uncovered by all of these coverings we had of the gross and subtle bodies, and finally through devotional service, through bhakti, the eternal sarup, our eternal spiritual form manifests, that's who we are. And now I've heard sometimes people ask Prabhupada, can that be changed? And maybe it can, maybe a person can go from one to another. But generally speaking, my understanding is you are who you are. Now, of course, we are all followers of Lord Chaitanya. We are followers of the six Goswamis. This is our line, Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And most of Acharyas tend to worship the Vrindavan Krishna, right? In the more intimate relationships, in the sweet aspect, the Madhurya aspect, usually in pure Sakya, Vatsalya, or Madhurya. So regardless of that, we fully appreciate the wonderful prema and the wonderful devotion of so many devotees, whatever their particular relationship with Krishna is. One other question on Devaki. Why did Devaki fear for Krishna if she knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead? She glorifies him in four verses, and her next verse says, oh, please, you know, take this away because I'm afraid of Kamsa. Well, going back to the same purport of Vishnachakvai Thakur, he says, we should never consider the sphere material. He said, how is it that Devaki and Vasudev, who realize the Supreme Lord directly with their senses, can be afflicted with fear and lamentation arising from ignorance? He says, one should not raise such a question. Such fear and lamentation is action, expression of prema, arising from Chit Shakti. As the fear shown by Vasudeva and Devaki is one of the Vibhachari Bhavas, the 33 transcendental bodily symptoms manifest in ecstatic love. The fear did not arise from ignorance. So basically, this fear was again a manifestation of the Vatsalya Rasa, of that mood arising, you know, which of course is very pleasing to Krishna. It's the most pleasing to Krishna, that pure sense of just being my parent, right? Okay. Moving to our next point here, the verse also mentions that Krishna is the personified Vedas, and therefore Devaki is the mother of the Vedas, because Krishna is the Vedas, she's Krishna's mother, so she can be considered the mother of the Vedas. Vedas means knowledge, and all knowledge comes from Krishna. Krishna is knowledge. of his primary potencies. One of them is the sambit, or the chit, potency of knowledge. So Krishna possesses all knowledge. He's the creator. He's not considered a creator. You have to be careful using a creator, because, you know, it's not like a time and place. You know, like, here's a time in history when something was created, like a discovery or an invention like that. Because these things are internal, you know, always manifesting. But basically, all knowledge is coming from Krishna. And, of course, the first verse that I thought of, probably the only one I knew, was 15:15 from the Bhagavad Gita. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. I think this is expressing a similar point as we made in this verse in the Bhagavatam. You know, not only is we can know Krishna by the Vedas, but he is the author, the compiler, the creator of the Vedas, and he's the one who knows them. So if we hear from Krishna, we have all knowledge. Prabhupada says, the Vedas give the right directions so people that they can properly mold their lives and come back to Godhead, back to home. The Vedas offer knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and Krishna in his incarnation as Vyasadeva is the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra. The commentation on the Vedanta Sutra is by Vyasadeva is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this gives the real understanding of Vedanta Sutra. The Supreme Lord is so full that for deliverance of the conditioned souls, he gives knowledge in the form of the Vedas and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita. Sri Krishna, the teacher of Bhagavad Gita, is worshipable by the conditioned soul. Thus, God is all good, God is all merciful. Now, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the natural commentation of the Vedas is Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's something that we hear, that in fact, the Vaishnavas didn't have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra for many, many years because we thought we didn't need one. We had Vyasadeva, Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentation. I'm really getting on the side here. But anyway, at some point in history, where was it? In Jayapur? Jayapur. That some of the other groups, like from the Ramanuja Sampradaya, other Sampradayas said, the Gaudiya Sampradaya is not really a legitimate Sampradaya because you don't have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra like all the rest of us do. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura was quite old at the time, not very well, so he sent his Siksha disciple, Baladeva Vijayabhushana, a great, great scholar of Vaishnavism. And so he went there and he gave him all these arguments. They said, well, yeah, but still, we want to see a commentary. So he said, all right. And I think they gave him 30 days or something, 90 days, whatever it was, something that, you know, to write in, you know, an astounding philosophical treatise, and he did it. He came back, they were astonished. A lot of them, they took him as their acharya, as their guru, and they let the Gaudiya Vaishnavas worship at that point. Anybody remember the name of his?
Govindabhasha.
Govindabhasha? Yeah, Govindabhasha, So, my point was, much of the Vedas are difficult to understand because they have a lot of ritualistic activity, karma, karmakanda, sacrifices for material benefit, practices of yoga, practices of varnashram dharma, practices of jnana, of trying to achieve knowledge. And so it can be difficult really understanding the original four Vedas. And it's difficult to understand the purpose of the Vedas. And what's the purpose? Krishna just said, by all the Vedas, I am to be known. Now, if you go and read, which I haven't really done a lot of, but apparently from those who are scholars in this area, if you try to read the original Vedas, you're not going to instantly conclude, oh, I see, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not quite that clear. Although, remember when Hridayananda Goswami was here, who has studied these things? And he said that actually right in the very first verse of the Rig Veda and the very first commentary, and it's the oldest book that's there, it establishes Vishnu as supreme. So it's there, but you got to look for it. It's the point. And most of us don't know how to look for it. We wouldn't have a clue. What to speak of, we don't usually know Sanskrit. So what do we do? Well, Jiva Goswami has discussed this very extensively in the Tattvasandarbha. Tattvasandarbha is his first of the Sandarbhas, and he wants to establish the tattva, establish the truth, establish how do we know what we use as our means of proof, as our evidence. And that's his whole purpose of his book, is to establish Srimad Bhagavatam as his proof. Then when he goes on to the other five sandarbhas, he over and over and over again quotes Srimad Bhagavatam to substantiate all of his philosophical points once he has established it as the truth. So, I've talked about this before once, but probably have a new audience here. Here's his point. He states that the Vedas do come directly from Krishna, but they cannot be understood in Kali Yuga on their own. He says no one has the intelligence and the knowledge to understand the Vedas in Kali Yuga. He says without the Puranas. In text 14, he says, the authoritative sound of the Vedas is impossible for anyone in present times to study completely. Its meaning is difficult to construe, and even the sages who have explained it in commentaries disagree among one another. For these reasons, we'd be well advised to turn our attention to the Shabda Praman of the Itihashas and Puranas, which are substantially non-different from the Vedas and which definitively explain what the Vedas mean. Of course, the Itihasas are histories like Mahabharata, which contains Bhagavad Gita and the Ramayana. And thus Vyasadeva compiled those and the Puranas to help us to understand them. Now, but that didn't quite solve the issue. Because Jiva Goswami points out, of the 18 Puranas, they're divided into three groups of six each. Those meant for people in the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness. Vaishnavas generally are really only interested in the six in the mode of goodness. And there's different versions of which six I saw, but Jiva says, according to Matsya Purana, the Vishnu, Narada, Garuda, Padma, Varaha, and Bhagavat Purana are the six that are more Vaishnava works. Now, these have been simplified to a version of only 400,000 verses, the Puranas. And that's according to Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.4, by the way. They're all listed there in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam and how many verses in each one. Now, they may not, even these, though, may not be available in full. For instance, Vishnu Purana, which is probably, I wish we had a good translation of that, because, you know, the Acharyas quote it a lot. It seems like it has all the different 10th canto pastimes of Krishna in it that they explain a little more, expand on some of those areas. But at any rate, it was 23,000 verses, a little bit more than Bhagavatam. But one thing I read said there's only about 7,000 that they can find now. So who knows where all these are. At any rate, oh, by the way, on the upper planets, Jiva Goswami says there's Puranas have 1 billion verses. So the demigods are reading 1 billion verses because, you know, their brains are about that much proportion, better than ours, many times better. So there still may be confusion. They're meant for different modes of nature. They're different worships. Can we even find them all? How to reconcile? Well, Vyasadeva gave it a try. He compiled the Vedanta Sutra. He thought, well, I'll just put it in very, very short, simple codes, make it, you know, clear. But in text 18 of the Tattvasandarbha, Jiva says, some sages may interpret the terse, highly esoteric aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra in a way that distorts their meaning. Can we think of anyone prominent who distorted the meaning of Vedanta Sutra? Shankaracharya. He used Vedanta Sutra to establish Mayavadi impersonalism. And the thing that's and he's pretty good at it. You know, you'd have a hard time arguing with Shankaracharya and, you know, holding your own. I mean, you know, we're talking about some extreme, well, he was incarnation of Lord Shiva, apparently. Anyway, some very, you know, so it that could go either way. Because he extracted Mayavadi philosophy out of what Vyasadeva would think would be establishing Vaishnava philosophy. Therefore, as the work goes on, Jiva more and more firmly and convincingly established that the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Amala Purana, spotless Purana, is our final authority, and that all the distilled Vedic wisdom is in its essence in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But, of course, even so, he says in Kali Yuga there are many variations of the Puranas. Sometimes you get different compilations. But he says, you know, Sridhar Swami is, when was he? 200 or 300 years before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Something like that, a couple of years, a little bit before. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya said he's the Swami. He's our authority. He's our authority on the Srimad Bhagavatam, the original commentator, Sridhar Swami. And Jiva Goswami says he went through all of the verses of the Vishnu Purana and the Bhagavat Purana, and he verified their authenticity. And so thus we know from the authority of Sridhar Swami and Jiva Goswami that the Bhagavatam that we have today, that has been passed down through our line of specific succession by our acharyas, is correct. So we not only have the correct work, we have the correct version, everything is right about it. That we can totally trust the Srimad Bhagavatam's authenticity and its ability to give us the final word in the absolute truth. Okay? And of course, then if you notice, in all the works by the Goswamis, that's their standard of proof. It's like the gold standard. Here's a philosophical point. How do they establish it? They quote Srimad Bhagavatam, right? And not just a few verses in 10th canto. Jiva Goswami, it's amazing. Well, they didn't have search engines, I don't think then, or indexes. But, just be able to quote hundreds and hundreds of verses all through the Bhagavatam, that actually substantiate these philosophical points. So it's quite amazing. And all the commentaries, have followed that and expanded upon that. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains its own origin and necessity. In fact, we have that right in the Bhagavatam in Narada's instructions to Vyasadeva. Starting from 158, Sri Narada said to Vyasadeva, because Vyasadeva was lamenting. He had compiled all of this literature and he wasn't feeling satisfied at heart. Why not? Narada said, you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. That philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. Although, great sage, you have broadly described the four principles beginning with religious performance, that'd be probably what, Artha Dhamma, Dharma, Kama Moksha. You have not described the glories of the Supreme Personality Vasudeva. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto places of pilgrimage for crows. Since Narada never holds back. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive pleasure there. And then text 11, just beautiful verse, I just like reading it. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc., of the unlimited Supreme Lord is of a different creation, full of transcendental words directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of the world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. Okay. So the conclusion is that all of our acharyas and Srila Prabhupada consider the Srimad Bhagavatam the final word in transcendental knowledge, and it is our proof, our standard of judgment. And so when Krishna is describing the Vedas, we're always thinking the Vedic literatures really mean the Vaishnava literatures. Those literatures, those parts which glorify Krishna, which really explicate Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his wonderful pastimes. So, another nice verse is Bhagavad Gita 2:46. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. So again, understanding that everything in our literature is meant for the understanding of Krishna, understanding Krishna's position, understanding our relationship with Krishna, and understanding everything about Krishna, his wonderful pastimes, and as described here, we want to know and remember his name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes. Sometimes also associates are mentioned, his lila. So all of those things are there. Now I'm going to end with, if it seems very difficult to understand, even with the Srimad Bhagavatam, all of this literature and all of this philosophy, Prabhupada gives us one very easy way of doing it. This is a purport to 2:46. Prabhupada says, it requires much time, energy, and knowledge, and resources to execute the purposes of the Vedas. This is hardly possible in this age. The best purpose of Vedic culture is served, however, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, the deliverer of all fallen souls. In this age of Kali, most of the population is foolish, not adequately educated to understand Vedanta philosophy. The best purpose of Vedanta philosophy is served by inoffensively chanting the holy name of the Lord. Vedanta is the last word in Vedic wisdom, and the author and knower of the Vedanta philosophy is Lord Krishna. And the highest Vedantist is the great soul who takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord. That is the ultimate purpose of all Vedic mysticism. I'll end at that point. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Comments? Questions?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much for the class. I had a quick question. So you mentioned that we are focused on Krishna and Vrindavan and Madhurya Ras and Sakya Ras and Vatsalya Ras.
Generally.
So I asked, you know, Prangovinda Prabhu yesterday mentioned that whatever we're meditating on in the morning, specifically during Brahma Muhurta, this will definitely come to be. And every morning we're chanting to Tulsi, Madhurya Lila Guna Rupa Namnam. You know, we're asking specifically to be brought into that Lila.
Yeah.
So how is it that I'm supposed to, you know, take that, considering that you also mentioned the other two rasas as well? Are we focused on Madhurya Lila, or are the other two rasas of a point of interest to us?
Although of course, you know, the Goswamis and many of our acharyas, obviously in Madhurya Lila, many of them are mentioned in the Gunadesh Deepika as being like Manjari Gopis and like that. Not necessarily. People can be in other rasas. Prabhupada was asked once, because the samsara prayers also tend to indicate Madhurya Rasa. They say one is, you know, engaged in the, you know, in the bowers of Vrindavan and serving the, you know, Radha and Krishna like that. And so they asked Prabhupada, does that mean that the guru is always a Madhurya Lila? Is he always a gopi? And Prabhupada said, often. He says, not always. He says, sometimes a coward boy. So, in other words, yeah, there can be other Lila. The thing is, I would say that's not something to overly worry about in the beginning, in our more neophyte stage, because as we advance in Krishna consciousness and Vaidhi Bhakti becomes more and more, you know, it purifies our heart more and more, and we naturally achieve the stage of Raghunuga Bhakti, where it becomes more spontaneous attraction for the Lord, then that will be revealed to us as far as our eternal relationship, that is. But if you're following Srila Prabhupada and following the processes of Vaidhi Sadhana, you're doing everything right to come to that platform of understanding, and that will happen on its own.
Right. Thank you so much, Guru.
Okay. And that we have examples even in Chaitanya Lila, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami's brother, Anupama. Anupam was a devotee of Ramachandra. He was in a completely different, was in Murari Gupta, wasn't he Hanuman? Devotee of Ramachandra. So, you know, there are others. I'm just saying generally we see that. Okay.
Dhamma Prabhu.
Yes.
What is the history of Devaki after the Battle of Kurukshetra?
I'm sorry.
What is the history of Devaki after the Battle of Kurukshetra?
What was the history of Devaki after the Battle of Kurukshetra? Well, she continued to live in Dwarka, right?
Yes.
Up until the whole disillusion of Dwarka, you know, until that chapter wrapped up. And everyone went back to Godhead, I guess. As far as I know, though, she was, all of her family, basically, I mean, Vasudeva, I think they all mainly survived the Battle of Kurukshetra. They weren't really directly connected so much with the Pandavas. I mean, some of their close people, like Satyaki and like that, were, you know, involved in the battle, but I don't think Vasudeva wasn't. And I know, was there something more further on that? Do you have some of the thoughts on that? Or?
No, I just wondering.
Just wondering.
Yeah, I mean, and in fact, some of the later chapters in the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, I believe, are after the Battle of Kurukshetra, where Devaki is mentioned. Let's see. Wasn't the Rajasuya sacrifice? No, that was before the Battle of Kurukshetra, yeah. I'm trying to think what other, because after that, Vasudeva are discussed with the sages, like, I know that they're mentioned in later chapters, though, Vasudeva and Devaki. So, I assume they were just living in Dwarka with Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, In terms of Nard, Nard actually is Madhu Mangal. He has the form of Madhu Mangal and Braj.
Narda.
Nard Muni is also Madhu Mangal and Braj, and he's also Srivast in Gaurlila. So he has, Nard Muni has multiple forms.
Do you know where that's found? Where is that found?
It's interesting. I think either in Gaur Ganesh Deepika or Nard Krishna Ganesh Deepika.
It says its origin,
Madhu Mangal.
Nard Muni is Nard Muni.
Yeah. They're different. So they're the same. In other words, he has multiple expressions of doing bhakti.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic. It's interesting. Sanatana Goswami talks about that quite a bit in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It's a good sort. It tells about how devotees can have multiple personalities and like that. Like I was just thinking of. One thing I was going to say about Devaki. Like, well, what happens in Chaitanya Leela? Well. A lot of times people think Sachimata was Yashoda, but Bhakti Siddhanta in his purports in Chaitanya Bhagavat says that she was Devaki. So is she Devaki, is she Yashoda, is she both? You know, maybe. So it can work like that. And another example is Nanda Maharaj. Sanatana Goswami says Nanda Maharaj is the same Nanda and Sananda in Vaikuntha. You know, the whatever they are, the servants, the doorkeeper. So that's the same Nanda. And they said, and there's also a demigod. That Nanda is also. So yeah, I mean, I have no idea how that happens. You know, I can't explain it more than just saying that our acharyas say it's possible. Yeah. So certainly Narada Muni could have other forms.
Yeah, also Gaurlila is the sort of benediction to all of the previous associates, like Hanuman, others. There's one verse, Premaiva Gopuramanam, Amam Ityagamat Pratam, Udava Adayo Apetan Vajanti Bhagavat Priya. All the dear devotees of the Lord, headed by Uddhava, they get the blessing to come into Gaur Lila to taste the intensity of the mood of Braj without giving up their original swarup.
Yeah.
So Gaur Lila is the place where, after Krishna himself realizes the beauty and the height of love, he gives that benediction that all the previous devotees from all the other incarnations, they can also come.
Yeah.
So the Pandavas come as the sons of Bhavananda Roy. Uddhava comes as Paramananda Puri, Nard as Srivas. So in this way they get the blessings and they experience in the Srivas Angan the intensity of what was experienced in Ras Lila.
Right.
Not under the same...
Lord Chaitanya is an extreme
mercy.
Emotional
That's
you know,
why only
manifestation.
Certain people could go into the Srivas Angan. He wouldn't allow everybody in.
Right.
Only those devotees from the previous incarnations.
Another thing, I was just reading this the other day and I hadn't exactly heard, I hadn't really heard exactly this direct, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying that as far as devotees, when we go back to the spiritual world, you know, many will go to, you know, Goloka, Krishnadana. He said others who have that mood will go to Lord Chaitanya's, to Gaur Lila, and he says, and some will go to both. If you can't make up your mind, if you really like Gaur Lila and Krishna Lila, you can go to both. Another thing, it's hard to exactly explain. I think there's kind of things where you kind of have to be there, I think. You've got to experience, you know, there's certain things that are really beyond our material intelligence, and it really requires, you know, realization on the spiritual platform. Over here.
Madhu Mangal's name came up. And
Madhu Mangal, yeah.
I was wondering that, now we know that Krishna and Balaram, that when they went to Gurukul, Dakshin, they asked to get their son, Sandipuni Muni, their son back. Now their son is Madhu Mangal.
Yeah, is it the same one?
Yeah.
I tried to find that out, and I studied different purports, and it wasn't absolutely clear. I thought one of the acharyas suggested that it was the same. Does anybody know for sure? I think that it is. It was Madhu Mangal that they retrieved from, you know, and brought back.
But then Krishna was having pastimes with Madhu Mangal in Vrindavan, and so...
It is a mystery, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it's a mystery.
When Mercy, when she ordered by Nara to go to Braj, she takes the son and daughter of Sandipani Muni with her, which is Madhu Mangal. Madhu Mangal becomes a friend of Krishna then, like his Kali Guru Gaur, because he's learning the art from Sandipani Muni. Madhu Mangal is like his friend at that time. When Vanvasi comes to Braj, she brings Madhu Mangal with her.
Yeah. So in other words, sometimes they follow them through different class times, you know, Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka. And the other thing, his daughter is Gargi?
Gargi.
And she was a Brahmin, of course, obviously, and their grandmother was Purnamasi. Sanapani Muni's mother was Purnamasi. And often in some of the different readings, you find that Madhu Mangal is actually very closely connected with Purnamasi, and they're advising Krishna about, you know, in fact, even like, you know, now Radharani's really, really upset, you know, feeling really separation. You need to do something here, you know. And Madhu Mangal seems to be, although he's a coward boy, very, very connected, very intimately in all of Krishna's dealings with the gopis and everything else. Yeah. There's a few like that, Subal, similarly. Anyway. Yeah.
Interacting with them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Others?
Hello, Hare Krishna.
Oh.
When you're discussing these personalities in Gaura Lila, I'm wondering, at Shiva Sangam, I'm wondering who the Mataji under the basket was.
Say it.
The lady under the basket. Who was hiding in Shiva Sangam?
I don't remember.
I know, yes, but in Raj Leela, who is she? Because she got to be there.
That was Brahmana, mother-in-law, they are not part of the Raja.
Okay.
How'd she get in there? But my mother was there.
It's interesting because sometimes you see a correspondence in similar activities and behavior to those in Gaura Lila and in Raj Lila. Yes, Prue. True enough.
One time I asked this question of Rajendra Nandana if Jai and Vijay were cursed to take three births, why did they take a fourth birth as Jagai and Madai demons? And then he told that same thing, that because everybody gets, so they're very important people in Vaikuntha, they get the chance to...
Yeah, they didn't want to miss all of the wonderful, bhava of Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. So, yeah.